Escuelas oficiales de idiomas de la Comunidad Autónoma de Canarias. Pruebas de certificación para la población escolar. Nivel intermedio B1 de inglés. Convocatoria de 2018. Prueba de comprensión auditiva. Esta parte consta de dos tareas. Escuchará cada grabación dos veces. Escuche y lea las instrucciones al principio de cada tarea y realícelas según se indica. Las respuestas escritas a lápiz o en tinta roja no se calificarán. No está permitido el uso del diccionario. El uso del teléfono móvil queda prohibido durante toda la prueba y tendrá que permanecer apagado y guardado. No escriba en los recuadros sombreados. Son espacios reservados para la calificación de las tareas.
Task 1. Listen to a talk about how internet affects the human brain and fill in the blank spaces with the correct word. Use only one word for each blank. Number 0 is an example. Please write your answers in the answer sheet provided. Now you have 1 minute to read the sentences.
How does human memory work? 20 years ago, you might have found your answer in a book or by asking a friend, but today, you'll Google it. There were 3.5 million searches in 1998. Now, there are 4.7 trillion search queries every day. When something changes our lifestyle so monumentally, you can bet it's changing us as well. Google has become our external hard drive. In a recent experiment, college students remembered less information when they thought they could easily access it later. We used to rely on friends and family members for this method of memory outsourcing, remembering who knew what rather than the information itself. But now, Google is the friend with all of the expertise. If the sum of all knowledge is constantly available in our pockets, is it any wonder that we've stopped bothering to keep it in our heads? Neurons that fire together wire together, and the same goes for those that fire apart. Neuroimaging of frequent internet users shows twice as much activity in the prefrontal cortex as sporadic users. This part of the brain is reserved for short-term memory and quick decision-making. Essentially, our brains recognize that most of the flood of online information is trivial and doesn't deserve our full attention. The problem is, the brain does what we train it to do. And every time we open a browser, we prepare for skimming instead of learning. So even if we really want to remember something from Google, our brains are predisposed to forget. Everything we ever wanted to know is available to us, and we have conditioned ourselves to ignore it. What do we actually know? If the goal is to forge a creative mind through critical thinking, our Google amnesia may be problematic. The information and experience that gets encoded into our long-term memory is the basis of our unique intelligence. Still, we may be able to mitigate the impact to our long-term memory by adapting our response to this new reality. After all, we can't stop the sea change of the information age. In recent years, American schools have focused less on fact memorization and more on teaching students to make innovative connections between the curriculum and real life. This way, it's less about the knowledge you have and more about how you use the information at hand.
Listen again.
How does human memory work? 20 years ago, you might have found your answer in a book or by asking a friend, but today, you'll Google it. There were 3.5 million searches in 1998. Now, there are 4.7 trillion search queries every day. When something changes our lifestyle so monumentally, you can bet it's changing us as well. Google has become our external hard drive. In a recent experiment, college students remembered less information when they thought they could easily access it later. We used to rely on friends and family members for this method of memory outsourcing, remembering who knew what rather than the information itself. But now, Google is the friend with all of the expertise. If the sum of all knowledge is constantly available in our pockets, is it any wonder that we've stopped bothering to keep it in our heads? Neurons that fire together, wire together. And the same goes for those that fire apart. Neuroimaging of frequent internet users shows twice as much activity in the prefrontal cortex as sporadic users. This part of the brain is reserved for short-term memory and quick decision-making. Essentially, our brains recognize that most of the flood of online information is trivial and doesn't deserve our full attention. The problem is, the brain does what we train it to do. And every time we open a browser, we prepare for skimming instead of learning. So even if we really want to remember something from Google, our brains are predisposed to forget. Everything we ever wanted to know is available to us, and we have conditioned ourselves to ignore it. What do we actually know? If the goal is to forge a creative mind through critical thinking, our Google amnesia may be problematic. The information and experience that gets encoded into our long-term memory is the basis of our unique intelligence. Still, we may be able to mitigate the impact to our long-term memory by adapting our response to this new reality. After all, we can't stop the sea change of the information age. In recent years, American schools have focused less on fact memorization and more on teaching students to make innovative connections between the curriculum and real life. This way, it's less about the knowledge you have and more about how you use the information at hand.
This is the end of task one. Now turn to task two. Task two. Listen to an interview with Simon Biles, the young American gymnast who created a sensation at the Rio Olympics. As you listen, decide which of the following sentences are true. Number zero is an example. Now you have 1 minute to read the sentences.
Being called the greatest gymnast of all time, a sporting superstar who stunned audiences at the Rio Olympics. Simone Biles took home 4 gold medals and wowed commentators with her virtuoso performances. But as the dust settles on the images of those extraordinary leaps and flips, what does the future hold for Simone Biles? As a youngster, she was adopted by her grandparents when her biological mother couldn't care for her. And she has in so many ways achieved her sporting greatness against the odds. Those achievements are now set to change the course of her life, to open doors and create opportunities that, as a child, practicing her tumbles in the local gym, Simone Biles simply couldn't have begun to dream of. Simone Biles, welcome to the BBC's 100 Women series. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been quite an incredible year for you. And millions of people watched you as you won those golds in Rio. Tell us what it was like when you were standing on that podium listening to the national anthem.
It's definitely a whirlwind of emotions because you feel everything at once. You feel how long you've prepared for that exact moment, and then you feel the pride and joy of representing your country, and then you finally get the gold and you're standing there hearing your anthem, and it's just like, it's no better feeling.
And I have to say, watching you when you were doing some of those backflips and somersaults, I mean, it was terrifying to watch. How do you prepare for something like that? Do you ever get scared yourself?
I mean, we're very well prepared, so I'm not necessarily afraid of my skills. It's more like I'm afraid of sometimes my performance whenever I go out there, but we prepared so well that once we got out there, it was just like one more routine. We were just so ready.
Now, you've been called the greatest gymnast of all time, and it's been quite a journey for you. When you look at yourself in the mirror, do you see a different person? Do you feel that you've changed through all of this?
No, I still feel like I'm the same bouncy, crazy gymnast that I was growing up. I'm just a little bit more disciplined now than I was before, and I've accomplished a lot more.
But of course, your life has changed so much. I mean, you've met your crush, Zac Efron. You've taken selfies with Kim Kardashian. What other challenges come with that newfound fame?
I think it's just learning how to handle all of it and all the pressure and all the eyes on you at all times. But other than that, I just try to carry every day the same. The hardest part is like no one wants to take a picture when I'm walking. And then as soon as I sit down to eat, everyone wants to come take a picture. And that's like the hardest part because I'm like with my family and I just want to eat. But other than that, it's all right.
And you've been doing this for such a long time. Mm-hmm. Has this all been a bit of a surprise? Because no one can really prepare you for that huge success that you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no one can prepare you for it, but you kind of have an idea in your head as you go along. And then once it happens, anything you expect, it's not what happens. But I mean, I think you're prepared for it because we've kind of grown up in it. So you kind of get used to it.
You said you're still the person who likes bouncing around. Yes. I mean, do you still do normal teenage stuff?
Yes.
Do you get time to?
Yes. I mean, now we're on tour, so that's a little bit harder going from state to state and doing all the shows. But I mean, we still find time. We still all go out to dinner. Yesterday, we all went to the lake and we were swimming and we went boating. So we still do normal things.
And I mean, it's been a real gruel to get to where you are. You've trained for 32 hours a week, I was reading. You've been homeschooled. Do you ever look at what you've had to give up? Do you think you've had to give up a lot to get to where you are today?
Well, I think anything that you do, and if you want to accomplish things and you set your goals, then you obviously have to give up things. But once you look back at it, you know it was for the better, and it's not like, oh, I had to give up this. It's like, yes, of course I had to give up this to get where I wanted to be.
So how did you stay driven and focused all this time?
At the beginning of the year, my mom would always make me write down goals on a piece of paper and take it to her. And so that's kind of how I always like was very well driven because I always had the next goal in mind.
So tell me what was on the list of goals for the beginning of this year to start with.
It was to make the Pac Rim team, compete my Chang on vault this year, and then place in the top three at nationals, and then to make an Olympic team, and that's where my goals
start. So it wasn't gold medal.
The last thing on the list was make an Olympic team.
Listen again.
She's being called the greatest gymnast of all time, a sporting superstar who stunned audiences at the Rio Olympics. Simone Biles took home 4 gold medals and wowed commentators with her virtuoso performances. But as the dust settles on the images of those extraordinary leaps and flips, what does the future hold for Simone Biles? As a youngster, she was adopted by her grandparents when her biological mother couldn't care for her. And she has in so many ways achieved her sporting greatness against the odds. Those achievements are now set to change the course of her life, to open doors and create opportunities that, as a child, practicing her tumbles in the local gym, Simone Biles simply couldn't have begun to dream of.
Simone Biles, welcome to the BBC's 100 Women series. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been quite an incredible year for you, and millions of people watched you as you won those golds in Rio. Tell us what it was like when you were standing on that podium listening to the national anthem.
It's definitely a whirlwind of emotions because you feel everything at once. You feel how long you've prepared for that exact moment, and then you feel the pride and joy of representing your country, and then you finally get the gold and you're standing there hearing your anthem, and it's just like, it's no better feeling.
And I have to say, watching you when you were doing some of those backflips and somersaults, I mean, it was terrifying to watch. How do you prepare for something like that? Do you ever get scared yourself?
I mean, we're very well prepared, so I'm not necessarily afraid of my skills. It's more like I'm afraid of sometimes my performance whenever I go out there, but we prepared so well that once we got out there, it was just like one more routine. We were just so ready.
Now, you've been called the greatest gymnast of all time, and it's been quite a journey for you. When you look at yourself in the mirror, do you see a different person? Do you feel that you've changed through all of this?
No, I still feel like I'm the same bouncy, crazy gymnast that I was growing up. I'm just a little bit more disciplined now than I was before, and I've accomplished a lot more.
But of course, your life has changed so much. I mean, you've met your crush, Zac Efron, you've taken selfies with Kim Kardashian. What other challenges come with that newfound fame?
I think it's just learning how to handle all of it and all the pressure and all the eyes on you at all times. But other than that, I just try to carry every day the same. The hardest part is like, no one wants to take a picture when I'm walking. And then as soon as I sit down to eat, everyone wants to come take a picture. And that's like the hardest part because I'm like with my family and I just want to eat. But other than that, it's all right.
And you've been doing this for such a long time. Mm-hmm. Has this all been a bit of a surprise? Because no one can really prepare you for that huge success that you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no one can prepare you for it, but you kind of have an idea in your head as you go along. And then once it happens, anything you expect, it's not what happens. But I mean, I think you're prepared for it because we've kind of grown up in it. So you kind of get used to it.
And you said you're still the person who likes bouncing around. Yeah. I mean, do you still do normal teenage stuff?
Yes.
Do you get time to?
Yes. I mean, now we're on tour, so that's a little bit harder going from state to state and doing all the shows. But I mean, we still find time. We still all go out to dinner. Yesterday, we all went to the lake and we were swimming and we went boating. So we still do normal things.
And I mean, it's been a real rule to get to where you are. You've trained for 32 hours a week. I was reading you've been homeschooled. Do you ever look at what you've had to give up? Do you think you've had to give up a lot to get to where you are today?
Well, I think anything that you do, and if you want to accomplish things and you set your goals, then you obviously have to give up things. But once you look back at it, you know it was for the better, and it's not like, oh, I had to give up this. It's like, yes, of course I had to give up this to get where I wanted to be.
So how did you stay driven and focused all this time?
At the beginning of the year, my mom would always make me write down goals on a piece of paper and take it to her. And so that's kind of how I always like was very well driven because I always had the next goal in mind.
So tell me what was on the list of goals for the beginning of this year to start with.
It was to make the Pac Rim team, compete my Chang on vault this year, and then place in the top three at nationals, and then to make an Olympic team, and that's where my goals
started. It wasn't gold medal.
The last thing on the list was make an Olympic team.
This is the end of task 2 and the end of the listening comprehension test.
Thank you.